listeners, and welcome back to the Victim to Victor podcast. My name is Anu, and I am your host. In this podcast episode, I have Marina Paul on my show. From Olympic gold medalist to CEO to Lieutenant Colonel, Marina Paul published a female leadership book in April 2021. In her book, Becoming a Superhero, Awaken Your Superpowers and Inspire the Magic in Others, she shares the journeys of highly successful women on their intensely raw emotional paths to leadership. At the age of just 26 at the time of this podcast, Marina has worked her way up in the competitive world of soccer, becoming an All-American NCAA College Cup Final Four contestant and a three-year team captain of the Georgetown University Women's Division I soccer team. In this podcast episode, we will discover what it means to be 100% human whilst lifting our own wills and our unique selves out of suffering. How representation and being the first sets the groundwork for others to seek inspiration to lead their own teams. How sisterhood is a lever of success for how readers can begin to lead their superhero lives. Through the lens of Paul's own vulnerable life experiences, both in competitive soccer and personally, we will explore what it means to be deeply human, to lead by example, and to love your people so that ultimately everyone is lifted up in a more equal world. Now get ready to let your cape fly and unleash your superpowers. Hello, Marina. Welcome to the Victim to Victor podcast. How are you doing, girl?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, wow. You look amazing. So fresh, and I love your curls.
Thank you. You do too after a long day of work. So I'm just getting started.
Oh, thank you so much. But, you know, it's always a joy to kind of meet such beautiful beings and to obviously, you know, hear about all these different stories. And I'm really excited to learn more about yours and your book and, you know, what motivated you to write Becoming a Superhero, Awaken Your Superpowers and Inspire the Magic in Others. I mean, what an amazing title. What made you choose that title?
Yeah, that's such a good question. It was the beginning of COVID. When I say the beginning, it was probably March 2020. And I was coming home, I was forced to go home into quarantine here in the US, in California. And I just remember working online every day and then closing my computer and just being stuck in this rut of, oh my gosh, the world is in such a bad spot right now. Wow. Everyone is scared. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I want my future to look like this, where I just sign on to work and then finish and live sort of an unfulfilled life.
Wow.
And at the same time, I was kind of closing this chapter that really started for me at the beginning of college and existed for a few years after school of just, I think, one, maturity, and what comes with growing up sort of after high school, as we call it here in the States.
Yeah.
And then just really understanding who you want to be as an individual. And I had a lot of, I would say mental health concerns that I was dealing with. And I felt like I was finally sort of coming out of that and learning, more of how to be who I wanted to be. And so I really wanted to find something that could explore that deeper, but also could help me move on. At the same time, I have such a deep passion for women, and just the roles that they play in life. And I was like looking for a mentor because I was like, you know what? I really want to be a successful female leader someday. And I need to figure out how to do that.
Okay.
So I found this program through one of my college professors, and it's a book writing program. And I was like, you know what? Wow. I'm just going to sign up and do this thing that I don't even know what I'm going to write about, but I want to write about women's empowerment.
I love that. Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to interview the coolest women I can find and figure out what I'm going to write about. And it wasn't until actually one of my first interviewers with one of the most successful here in the States, call it NCAA for collegiate athletics, one of the most successful female gymnastics coaches ever. And I interviewed her and have admired her for years. And she said the difference of what makes, she coaches a lot of our US Olympians in gymnastics when they go to college. And I ask, what makes them different from like an average just athlete that comes to our program? And she goes, what makes these women so great, and she had used the term superheroes in a lot of her interviews, she's like, what makes superheroes versus normal athletes is that superheroes do everything that great athletes do. They do everything that champions do in terms of winning, but they also elevate others in the process.
Okay.
And I started to notice this theme, and I was like, wow, I'm not just interviewing regular badass women. I'm interviewing legitimate superheroes, because what they're doing is they're also lifting the lives of others, not just doing well in their role.
Yeah.
So titles came about. And so this title is this journey of myself trying to figure out how the superhero I kind of want to be in my life. And it's very much, I think superheroism is a forever journey, but it's also the culmination of all of these different women and all the different stories and how they have become superheroes in their life.
Wow. I think that's amazing. And how old are you again?
I am 26.
Wow. Do you know what? At the age of 26, I feel you've come such a long way. People don't even get to this level of realization when they're in their 60s, 70s. I just think you've just done so well. Honestly, you should be celebrating how far you've come already. Your life's only just beginning, right?
Thank you. I think it's a combination of like, I was really lucky to come out of the right birth canal and have amazing parents who've always supported me, to be in the best sort of filtering systems, to have the best opportunities. Beautiful. And I think that also looking back on mental health, and I'm sure you can relate to trauma in this way.
Yeah.
While I'm not grateful that it happened in a way to take the positive out of it, it literally transforms you in the way you think and the way you act. And so if you choose to see sort of a positive light in some part of it or the journey that you have after, I think that you have to almost grow up. You know what I mean? You're not grow up, but you have to go through this metamorphosis almost.
Again, it's just so young. And my next question was going to be about you. Tell us about you. Who is Marina Paul?
Yeah. So, full head of curls, which I never used to wear, honestly, before I went on this journey, because I was so afraid of them. But
I love it.
No, so I grew up in California, in the US. I grew up, like, my favorite thing in the world is still sports. So that is a big part of my book. But I grew up a beach kid, just loved to play sports and then be at the beach and just do really well in school. And I would say, so I went to Washington, D.C., at a university called Georgetown University to play soccer, in college. And it was a really great experience because it's our nation's capital. It's also a pretty big city, and I was from like a local beach town. So I was like, this is going to be really cool and interesting.
Cool.
Yeah. And so I arrived there. Didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do, but I was really drawn to entrepreneurship. So kind of studied, that and just like really fascinated with like understanding people and how they operate. So ended up kind of taking this route in marketing, and really enjoying that. And at the same time, I got to school when you think everything is going to be picture perfect and have this like sort of dream experience. I would say for a majority of college, I was hiding like a very, very toxic, sort of eating disorder. And also that was, I would say situational depression that manifested itself into an eating disorder, and this fear of like, of not being perfect all the time and not having this perfect cool girl image. And so my journey on the outside looks very kind of fluid. But definitely, it's not. And that's kind of the story that I'm now comfortable with sharing. So for me, I think that when I would describe myself, I would describe myself as probably pretty goofy, and like to have a good time, but also like very type A and very driven as to what I want to do. So it's kind of this, like, I'm a little bit of like an anomaly, 'cause it's just, I don't know, like both sides pull at each other. And now I work as a consultant, and still very much interested in this entrepreneurial space and this ability to create and see a problem or see something that doesn't sit right in our stomachs and be able to fix it. So, I'm now back in California and I still love sports just as much, and I'm still bouncing around trying to do everything.
Excellent.
So yeah, that's a little bit more about like what I've done and less about what I do. This is always a hard question.
No, that's amazing. But also I think, you hit the nail on the head in terms of the fact that you're out there sharing your vulnerabilities with the world. That's huge, especially, at such a young age. Mm-hmm. So in terms of vulnerabilities, right, because you're right, that there needs to be more people out there just coming to terms with the truth, authenticity. I'm all about that. People being genuine and just not having to falsify their lives just to impress people. Mm-hmm. And so as a millennial that you are, I was just thinking about social media, what your views are about that.
That, I'm so glad you asked that question, because I really, truthfully have really struggled with social media, mostly because you will see someone that you know very well, and then you'll see what they post on social media and you're like, that's like not really you. And then you're hanging out with them and you'll be like, wait, which version am I getting? And so I think when you start to internalize that, you're like, oh, do I have to put on this image that I'm not who I am or who I say I am? And I think in this process of discovering myself and writing this book, so when I was in the deep pits of whatever I was going through, I was like not active at all, because I was like, I can't get this perfect image that I want to portray, because while I was working so hard physically to look okay, mentally, I was the most not perfect I'd ever been. And I was trying to achieve an image that doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
And so for me, a lot of times I see social media, now I can see it more objectively, and that it's all of these images that aren't really, that like, they don't really exist. Like they're not the truth. And so I think with me personally, everything that I do, I'm like, I need to be as true to myself as I am, whether I'm communicating it in a book or I'm communicating it online, because one, I need to do that for myself. Two, I might be out there and someone might see me and be like, I would rather have them say, I'm so happy that this person is being so true to who she is, that I now get to be that way.
Yeah.
Rather than being like, oh, I need to be like her in a toxic sort of way.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that comparison, it happens whether we like it or not. That's like what our world, unfortunately.
It is. It's natural. Oh, yeah. God, it's so natural. Exactly. And just again, when it comes to depression, and I know, there's a lot more cases of suicide. I don't know what it's like in the States at the moment.
I mean, I would say it's pretty bad. I would say our I'm millennial, close to Gen Z, though we've grown up in the information age. So we're used to having everything at our fingertips all the time. And I think that while it's amazing in terms of accelerating technology and business and things, we also don't really get the ability to like grow up and figure out who we are and like have that space, because yeah. you're constantly overwhelmed with all of these things coming in. And so our mental health is at a detriment because of it.
Right. Oh, goodness. And that's why we need leaders like you to actually lead the way, you yeah. know, with your book and your talks and, you know, all the amazing energy that you're spreading out there. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, and I mean, I feel like you can probably relate to this, but I've seen a lot of, it's so great because I think so many more people are more comfortable sharing their stories, because I don't know if I would have been even 5 years ago, even if I was in this headspace where I felt like I could, because it wasn't really like what people were doing. Now more people are sharing. But what I kind of fear with that is like almost like an oversharing where it becomes like toxic in that way, you know. Yeah. I don't know how to like eloquently say that, but it's yeah. kind of like finding this, okay, like this is just the raw
balance. Yeah, for sure. Exactly. Yeah. Because I know, you know, when it comes to vulnerability, a lot of the wrong people can actually take advantage of that story, mm-hmm. you know, for somebody else, and they can use it against people as well. So I think you really have to be careful who you're sharing it with, unless you're solid within yourself and mm-hmm. you're ready for any comeback, you know, and mm-hmm. trolls and haters or, you know, whatever they call them these days.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm interested to find out about your book and your journey of writing that book, these amazing inspirational women whom you met along the way, you've written about, because as you know, this podcast is Victim to Victor, and I'm hoping that this episode is victorious for everybody. Yeah. Let's set an example.
Exactly. Well, and so I very much wanted to write it as like, listen, I'm young. I don't know. I don't have any answers to the world. All I know is like what I've been through and my experiences. And yeah. I've read a lot of leadership books, and even with like academic curriculum where it's like leaders do X, Y, and Z, and they wake up at 8, you know, 6 a.m. and they eat this for breakfast, and then they read this, you know, Wall Street Journal. And I'm like, that's amazing. But like, I don't know anything about them as a human being. I'm like, so does everyone operate like a robot? Because, you know, I'm like, and especially women, like we don't get to know their stories. And so
that's true.
I was like, how can I reach these women and make it vulnerable and real? And how do I get some insight as to like times that they've failed or things that keep them up at night that aren't just like, am I hitting revenue goals, but like, are my employees okay? And so I was doing a lot of research on what women excel at comparatively to men in leadership, because I really wanted to make this focus on women. And it's all of those things that women are criticized for being like too nurturing, too compassionate. Those were the things that saved companies in the end. And you can see stats of when a woman comes in, like women are mostly hired when a company is doing poorly. And again, this is just within the US that I've looked at this data, but they also are more likely to save a company because they offer those key elements that a company is missing that often led to their downfall. And so it's like, let's stop hiring women in positions of failure. Let's start hiring them as, you know, to just lead in general, because they should just have that job. And not saying that men shouldn't, but why can't, instead of criticizing those things that like the human aspects and the emotional aspects that make women so amazing, how can we also allow and teach men to also emulate those things? Because they can be soft and vulnerable. Like they don't have to be overly masculine and uptight and just, and mean. And so I was looking at it from that perspective a lot. And that's kind of where I tried to take a lot of the interviews that I had. And then going back to the piece of like, I don't really know anything yet in my life. I was like, I'm going to like infuse personal anecdotes in there where I'm like, this time when I like really failed or like I really did not believe my worth, I take you into that moment, and I try to use a lot of metaphors, like being an arcade game and like using that claw thing that you try to get these stuffed animals that are impossible to get. That's how I describe the idea of perfection.
Oh, nice.
So it's, I try to make it super relatable where you're like, oh, I can totally picture myself in that moment. And it's not just like this robotic analysis of leaders.
Right. Oh, wow. So, that's very interesting. Nice. So how did you go about picking and selecting the leaders?
Yeah. So, I didn't have a strategy to begin with. I'm like, I'm just going to find the coolest women that I come across with, or I know. I'm going to message them on Instagram or LinkedIn or email them.
Cool.
What was really awesome is pretty much all of them were super responsive. Was, I mean, it just goes to show, I think also a generational shift of women really wanting to help other women, which is amazing.
Nice.
And so I also knew that I'm like, I'm not going to get the Oprahs. I'm going to stay realistic for who I can actually reach. And, but also I'm like, there are women I felt a personal connection to. So like with the gymnastics coach I spoke about, I've been following her for years, and I'm like, I just feel a personal connection to your coaching style.
Yeah.
And so I knew I would be able to write that much better about her.
Wow.
And then I also looked for these key components of, you have to be incredible at what you do, but you also have to make sure that you're also uplifting other people, because you can be a very successful leader, but be a dictator and not a motivator. And true. So where is that motivation piece? So those are the biggest components. I interviewed about 25 women, and I think 13 of them made it into the book as like key interviews, but all of them definitely, like, they're working, everything they've done is infused into how I wrote and why I wrote the things I wrote about.
Awesome. Wow. What an amazing achievement that is. And how long did the whole process take you?
It took me about a year.
So, wow. Okay.
Yeah. That's a good time. Yeah. So it was definitely really challenging. I also think that I have to really process things. And I don't know how it was for you writing your book, but there's a lot of really hard subjects I wanted to write about. Especially so here in the States, we're obviously going through a massive social justice movement. And I think we still are, and we still should be. And so I wanted to write about those things, but obviously being white, I was like, I need to make sure I process these with the right people and women of color and men of color who can actually tell me, like, this is how, having those key conversations with friends and things to make sure that I was doing my due diligence and writing in a way that was represented the message that I wanted to come across.
Sure.
And I also think that was like being selective in who I interviewed as well, because if I interviewed all white women, it would not be becoming a superhero. Yeah. It wouldn't be holistic. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was one of my other questions, was regarding who was your most inspirational superhero? And was it the gymnast manager, you said?
She's unbelievable. But I think the one that was so great was because it was so surprising. I didn't know anything about her, honestly, before this process. She received her MBA from Georgetown. So that was my connection. And there's our alumni program was like, Coma Gandhi Fishbein, which is her name, she's going to be giving a lecture on coding. Okay. And she's the vice president of coding for the Code Academy, which like over 50 million users use now. And they offer coding to people. I was like, wow, she seems really cool.
Yeah.
And in her bio, she had played rugby at Harvard.
Cool.
And she got into Harvard on her own, played rugby there, also played women's soccer.
Brilliant.
And I read more about her. So she, was one of the first women. So she also did, she was joined the Naval Academy. She was a commander and a naval officer. She was one of the first women allowed on a naval combat ship, or US Navy combat ship, when the moratorium was lifted, because women weren't allowed to be on ships before, before that. And then she also played professional rugby for 20 years. She's done all this tremendous work for people. And she's also like one of the smartest human beings I've ever met. And she was the first woman who became the head coach of a men's armed forces team. So she is the US men's Navy rugby head coach.
Wow.
So she's just done all these things. And we talked about like the, how do you transition from being on a naval ship with all men and just men, yourself being their manager or boss, essentially. Right. And they're not used to seeing a woman, to being, you know, the first Black female in many situations.
Yeah.
To playing a professional sport that's deemed like a male sport.
Yeah.
So she's had so many different roles, and it's like, how does she maintain her identity throughout? And she's just unbelievable in her approach to how she thinks about human capital and like the way you treat people.
Yeah.
Is just phenomenal. And I just left like my jaw hit the floor, and she's like, I just can't believe you chose me to like interview for your book. And I was like, are you kidding me?
She's an inspiration.
Right. She just is one of the most humble human beings. Just one of those heroes you would never know if you walked next to them in the grocery store, but you're like, you're absolutely incredible.
They're the best ones, aren't they? The ones with no ego, you know, they're just doing their business.
Right.
Wow. Right. That is so something. Yeah. So tell us about your experience in sports. And yeah, I think that that'd be quite interesting because I know that there was probably a lot that happened.
Yeah, a lot. So going into college, I was choosing between playing volleyball or soccer. I wanted to play both in school, but they're the same season in the US. And so I chose soccer because I wanted to go to Georgetown. And my freshman year was really great. I mean, great from the outset when you think about how successful our team was. I was playing the whole time, which was not common for freshmen. And, but that is when my eating disorder like really hit. And I also was in a really, I would say traumatizing relationship. Just like, I'm not going to use the word abusive because I wouldn't say that it was, but the verbal language, I understood how important the power of words are, especially in our relationship. And that person was very not sensitive with the way he spoke to me, and the way he spoke about other women. And so I think that that was not the cause, but another catalyst to why I was so insecure. And so I think that like soccer, then I almost got my scholarship revoked and got kicked off the team because I had lost so much weight that my coach was genuinely concerned my well-being, and I wasn't doing well in school, and school is like my thing. So, I think at that moment, soccer then became my crutch to lean on. So I was like, I have to be okay for soccer.
Yeah.
So throughout those next years, I kind of just like, I was living, but I wasn't fully myself. I just kind of was like staying afloat and surviving.
Yeah.
Which is, I look back and I'm like, you have to hug that person because they're doing everything they can, you know?
Yeah.
So come my senior year or the end of my junior year, I blow out my knee, tear my ACL meniscus. And I'm partially tore my MCL in one of our championship games, our league championship. And I was like a truck just hit me. I'd never really had a big injury before.
Wow.
And again, soccer was my crutch. And so I was like, what do I do now? And I just became miserable. And I didn't necessarily stoop back into the eating disorder world. I just was like so upset all the time and mad. And because I hadn't done the work to be okay on my own, I always had to lean on something else, which are sports, because I knew I was good at them. And so I would say kind of try to get back from that really quickly and ended up tearing my ACL again shortly after. And that was when I was like, okay, whatever I'm doing right now is not working. And so you have these moments, I think, that happen in life. You don't, but like any sort of traumatic experience, of course you don't want those to happen, but the choice isn't whether you want those to happen. It's whether, like, what are you going to, how are you going to choose to get out of it?
Yeah.
And so that was probably one of the hardest journeys I had ever been on. But again, at the same time, I was still coming back for soccer.
Okay.
So I ended up coming back and doing a master's at Georgetown and trying to learn how to be an actual leader when nothing's going right for me,
right,
which was one of the hardest lessons I ever learned. And I realized you have to like the person that you're looking at in the mirror first before you can start to really like your teammates. Cause whatever was going on wrong with me, I was taking it out on my team.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've been the captain. This is my third year being the captain of the team. And so,
whoa,
you can't do that. And we're in the top 15 every year in the country. So excellent. We're a very good team, very high expectations in both school and sports. So,
oh, brilliant.
Yeah. So we came back, and that year wasn't even starting and playing, and I had started and played every single game I'd ever played. So I learned how to be a leader without playing or without anything going right, and then started to play again. And that year we made it to the Final Four, which is the top four teams in the country. And we lost, but we were ranked third in the country that year. Excellent. And received... Yeah. And I received all American accolades, means you're one of the top players in the country, which was great. But I was like, for me, it was more so like, this isn't even about me because I was a wreck at the beginning of the season. Like this is a product of what my team did to help me get here.
Oh, bless you.
So yeah, it was, that was all phenomenal. But then again, like went straight downhill from there. Cause that was probably one of the hardest moments of my life. But
whoa.
When you graduate from that, you know, and I chose not to pursue soccer because I had other interests, and I definitely could have, but I was like, I need to go figure out who I am. And it was, 3 years of figuring it out and trying to find joy and pure happiness again without having this need to have sports be the thing that only brings me happiness.
Yeah.
And so I think that sports can be a metaphor, honestly, for anything in life, like whether you're leaning on a partner in a relationship or whatever you idolize. Like, I just think that I think for me, it really showed that like, I cannot put so much weight on a thing or a person. Like I have to be genuinely okay with myself on the inside. That was my sports experience. And now it's more so like, how do I make this an enjoyable part of my life, and rather than being the part that I have to rely on to be happy?
Yeah, that's beautiful. That is. And yeah, so your day-to-day now, cause you're a captain, right? Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It was my first exposure to like managing or leading, and you have to deal with what your coaches are saying. So like, I guess like in a company, like what the executives are saying, but also what your employees are saying, and you don't know what's happening in people's lives. And so I just really tried to get to know each one and every one of my teammates really well. And so I try to take that into my work now, especially at a time during COVID when people are just hanging on. You have to bring that human element. Otherwise it's like, we're with each other more than we are with our friends with our families at work. So it's like, you have to make it enjoyable or else it's
exactly what is life it? Away. So what's your day-to-day life consist of then?
Yeah. So right when I graduated, I worked for a startup that one of my friends started, and I moved to New York City, and it was super fun. And they're a coffee beverage company. So we were running around like every grocery store all around the US pretty much. And it was super crazy. And then I realized I had to work on my mental health a lot. I couldn't just keep living this fast paced life without figuring out my mind. So I transitioned into a management consulting, and I worked a lot with the federal government, like our postal service and the State Department. So like more international embassy stuff. And now I'm back in California, and yeah, I'm working for the California government right now, but
excellent.
Yeah, work a lot more now in sales and products and things like that. So
nice.
It's been a good stable thing for my mental, just figuring this out. It's very much a step in the journey.
Yeah. What's your ritual then? How do you sustain such a healthy mental state?
Yeah. So I would also like to preface that I say a lot of these things, and I know that mental health for how it exists in my brain and my body, it's very much an ongoing thing. Yeah. And it's like every day is its own. And mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest things you can do for yourself is, one, deeply get to know yourself and get connected with yourself. You don't have to be okay with yourself at that moment, but, or every moment. But I think what's been important for me is, so I love meditation because it forces me to slow down. Brilliant. And you have to set aside time, I think, to be alone and like do your thing. I think being around people, I think cutting out toxic relationships are huge. So I talk about add-ins and add-outs in my book, but it's like, what are toxic relationships that are not allowing you to love yourself? Because everyone knows what those are in their gut. And getting those out of your life, and then really finding people and community that wants to surround you and pump you up and be there for you. So even on your worst days, you have someone to talk to that's like, hey, I got you. You don't have to be okay right now, but
that's beautiful. Yeah. Just having that community support is so important. Yeah.
It is. And I also almost think that the community support's so great, and that those people who support you will also show you who doesn't support you like very clearly. And so when you have a good relationship with someone, you can compare it to the ones that you're like skeptical about. And while it's hard to break up relationships, it's so important for you to just like more so be okay with yourself than to have a relationship with someone who's not making you feel okay in yourself with yourself.
Yeah. That's so important. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that lends itself a lot to like connection, which is a big thing I keep thinking about. But what I would say my book is really about is like, how do you find deep connection with yourself? And then how do you find that with other people? Because I think ultimately what those leaders are doing in my book is they are so in tune with who they are and what they want to be. And they use that to go build this connection with other people. Cause when you build that connection, then you're able to elevate them.
Yeah.
So
that's so true.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, it is. And it all starts from within, you know, we are our own superheroes.
Exactly. And it doesn't even have to be like, you don't have to be a CEO of a multi-billion dollar company.
Not at all. No.
You can be a local hero who, even if you work at a grocery store and you are, or wherever you're working, the post office, or, you know, or you're a stay-at-home mom or something, like it's about the amount of impact that you bring to your daily life and those around you.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily about the title that you achieve.
Yeah. And it's that quote, be the change you want to see in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
And that is you right now. And do you have plans? Do you have plans for another book?
No. And I'm sure you probably got asked that as well. I could definitely see myself writing something in the future, whether it's an iteration of my book to make it for perhaps a younger audience. So like more of a teenage audience. I also write that you have to sort of choose your fight in my book. That's one of my chapters. And I'm just looking over there because my stack of books is over there. Oh.
You'll have to show us one, put one on the screen.
I know. I was like, why don't I have one on my desk? The choose your fight. And I think it's so important. We all, I think, are born in this world to have a cause that we want to fight for and we truly feel a part of. And I think that you're doing that actively right now through your podcast and your book and everything. And for me, it's like really, I truly believe my fight is for women to feel wholly fortified in who they are. Not who everything and everyone else wants them to be, but just as they were born. And so I want to keep on this subject and everything. And I'm also actually, so I'm launching a company that was inspired by my book and sort of the ethos that comes with it. That, is actually a women's sports performance company, and it's launching, by the end of September, early October. And I just noticed. So if you are a female athlete and you have to play organized sports, you'll notice a lot of your clothes say men's sizing and or boys sizing, depending. I'm 6 feet tall. So I wear the men's because it's longer, but a lot of my teammates are short, so they would wear boys. But I was like, there isn't women's performance wear that like actually fits our bodies. It might say women's.
Oh my god, it's so true. Yeah, because I'm 5'8" and I've struggled all my life really trying to find long trousers and leggings. Mm-hmm. You know, everything just ends up being ankle scrapers. I can imagine for you.
It's like doesn't fit the length, or doesn't fit our stomachs, or our, you know, our waist or our behind. Yes, and so it's exactly. Just like, or doesn't adjust for like we gain weight or we bloat or like we do things and adjustable. Our bodies are so transient.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, why don't I just create a brand? Because I'm so about this idea and this freedom to perform for women, to perform as who you are.
Brilliant.
I've always wanted, this has always been a problem. We always used to doctor our clothing whenever we got it for preseason. And so I'm like, why don't I just create the brand that I always wanted to have in this women's sports space? So that's what I'm absolutely trying to create. And
hopefully, I love it.
Yeah, we can get more women believing that they're good enough and who they are and whoever they want to be is awesome.
That is. Wow. That's amazing. So where do you see yourself in the future then, businesswoman?
Oh gosh, I know. If I had a dream tomorrow, I would be running this like massive women's sports company that would extend beyond even retail, but extend into the mental health space and the friendship space and the women relationships between women space and sort of that leadership space. So all the things that I kind of highlight in my book, I'm like, how do I build this into this something big where it's almost like this, not even a networking, because that almost seems superficial, but this relationship space.
Just for sure. It's it's going to be your destiny, your future, your project. You know that.
That's my middle name, Destiny.
Is it? Oh my goodness. No
There we go.
I didn't know that. I swear I didn't know that.
But so my brand is called Superhera, but it's spelled S-P-R-H-R-A to make it like a little bit more
unique.
Like, unique. But I took the becoming a superhero and I was like, why don't we attach an A to it? Because it's derived from a female. And I think things that are derived for, I've heard and I've seen things that are built by women for women ended up being better for all. So.
Oh, wow. I love that. And I just love your concept of sisterhood. You know, it's just, it's so important. It's so important. It's time to not bitch about each other, and it's time to hug each other and just show love and compassion towards each other, because what else is there in the world?
100%. Like, life is too hard.
Yeah.
And you experience trauma. Like, life is too hard already for us to not be okay with each other.
Exactly.
And if you look back on the history of why women are combative, it's because we were pinned against each other to fight for this man to be with. And whether you're, straight or not, it's like that. Wait, I look, when I did a lot of research on that for my book, I was like, that's why we're fighting. Like, of course, other things. And then it manifested into all these other areas. But I'm like, really? Because the women I know are way more complex and way too good to be reduced to something bad.
I know, self-worth, right? Girls, you know.
I know. Yeah. And so it's just like when we all fight together and we all boost each other up, we don't have to agree on anything. And I think that's us not agreeing makes for a better world, because we build better products and build better things. But having the respect for each other, listening, I think that's what we can do.
Absolutely. And I wanted to ask as well, because there's been a lot of hype about the schooling system at the moment. And I know that, you know, it wasn't long ago and like since you graduated. So what's your opinions on the schooling system in the future?
Do you mean,
like college, you know, because, you know, I'm linking it to, you know, the debts that everyone's getting into at the moment.
Yeah. So I thought you were going with, college athletes can now get paid by companies in the US. And so I was like, oh, is that what you're asking?
Cause I'm
obviously women aren't going to sign as many endorsements if we're not on media. So we're not going to get paid. You know, what I also see coming out of COVID is so many women have been hurt because of childcare. So when I think about schooling system right now, that's more the thing that I have an opinion on. It's like, we need to more so subsidize or help women who have to like want their kids to have the best education, but also want to be working mothers. Like where can we have more dads or more, like, you know, other partners, whatever that is to help. I think, college, it's so hard. It's so unfair. Again, like I was born out of the right birth canal. Like I didn't really have to think about, I was successful teams and worked hard enough to be able to get college pretty much paid for, but because I was in the right areas at the right time.
Right.
A lot of people don't have that luxury. Yeah. Most people don't. And so I don't have a fully formed opinion on it, but I definitely think that things need to change. Like it is so expensive. It is so expensive. And if you don't have parents or you don't only have one parent or you don't, it's just, I can't imagine why, like, even to live in California is expensive. I can't imagine also having like student loan debt and things like that. It's just,
it's crazy.
Schooling has to change. Healthcare has to change. We have the most expensive healthcare in the States, in the world. Goodness. And we still can't get access to your, like all of these fundamental things we should have. Wow. So
There's a lot to be done. Politics.
Oh, and that's the hard part, because you look at your communities and you're like, I just want my neighbor to be okay, you know?
Yeah.
So there's a lot that needs to change. And I'm like from both sides of things. So
yeah.
Two-party system we have here, but
we are coming to the end of our talk. I just wanted to ask you a few more questions just to grill you before we end.
Yes, of course.
Oh, bless. So what would you say has been your biggest regret to date?
I think, well, a lot of times, so I obviously am entering this women's sports space again. I think my biggest regret is not playing professional soccer after I graduated. Okay. But at the same time, I think in my gut, I knew that I had to fix my head. And so, I'll never know if that was like the right thing to do, but I think that's like my biggest. And then I would also say like more than that, like having more fun and saying more, yes, to more opportunities, because I said no to so many things because I was so sick and I just didn't, I was like, I'm just going to like lay in bed because I'm not worth going out or, you know, doing all these things. I don't deserve that. And so just knowing that, like, but again, that comes from like, I think a sickness. So I'm like, I'm going to say yes to more things now that genuinely make me happy, because I know that like, you don't have to earn happiness. Like we're just born, like we're born worthy and we're born worthy of experiencing joy.
Yeah.
And so that's something that I still have to tell myself. I'm like, no, you know, you're born worthy. You can have fun. Like, life is meant to be joyful. So you don't have to earn that. So my biggest regrets come from things that I like genuinely believed to be true. And now I'm like, okay, I still have time to on this earth to do not do that.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good answer. So basically just, I think the moral of the story is to just take up opportunities, go live your life, you know, stop being fearful and be the yes girl, but not too much.
Within some reason.
Oh, God. Oh, bless. So what is the one piece of advice that you'd like to give to my listeners?
Yeah, this is my, I would say to just never abandon yourself. Okay. The choices that I've made where I have chosen something else and abandoned myself and what I knew in my gut was to be true are some of the most disappointing moments that I've ever experienced.
Okay.
And so even if your gut is saying like, you need to take a break, you need to not do the crazy thing, the cool thing that everyone else is doing. Like, I promise you, if you listen to your gut and you don't abandon yourself, like your situation will definitely work out. And I think like that goes to get to know yourself and love yourself first, like before anything else, because I don't believe, for me personally, like I can truly love and connect with someone else before I really start to love, you know, who I am, or even like yourself for that reason, you know?
Yeah.
So I would just say, just don't abandon yourself. It's not worth it.
No, yeah. And it is. And I've been saying this quite a lot recently about the fact we need to be marrying ourselves before we marry anybody, because, you know, what else is there if you can't even love and accept yourself? And this is, you know, where intuition is important, because I know a lot of people, if they don't love themselves, and they're not going to trust their gut feeling, are they? They're not going to trust their intuition. So this is why, you know, self-love and, you know, just how you feel about yourself, it's a bit of a work in progress. But, you know, we can all get there, can't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And I highly recommend meditation. I thought it was so weird. And I was raised like pretty religious. And I was like, I don't understand the difference between meditation and praying and all this stuff. I could not recommend it more. You just create that space for yourself. And there's things that I learned from Jay Shetty, actually. There's things that you need to make time for, because they actually give you time back in your day. And one is sleep. The other one is sort of meditation, or taking this time to really be with yourself. The other one is just exercise, is not just, but exercising. Yeah. But those two first things are like, take care, do these things, because it actually makes time in your day. It makes you okay mentally, so that you can go after anything that you need to.
Oh, I love that. So and that was going to be my next question, which you might have answered it already, is, you know, what is the one thing that my listeners could do right now?
Yeah. So something that I also, I don't know, like I always say, okay, so I've said meditation. I love sleep. I need it. And exercising. I would also say that something that I never really let myself experience was like just doing something for fun that you love. And I love writing and journaling. And so I do it every morning. And I experience that through this book writing process. But even if it's like jumping in the waves, if you're near the ocean or just do one thing a week that like genuinely brings you joy. Or if you like coloring cartoons and you're 50 years old, like color cartoon, you know, something that like doesn't require any productivity, but just like you've just loved to do once a week and then see what that does.
Follow your passion, follow your heart. Yes. Exactly. It's not all about, you know,
exactly
working and, you know, just trying to achieve. Oh, it's all about just being present, right?
Yeah.
Enjoy in the moment. Go play with your grandchildren or your kids or your brothers or sisters. Wow.
I know, which is definitely like an American thing where it's like you have to be productive at all times.
Ugh, I know.
Every day.
And here as well. It's just work, yeah. work.
Ugh. Yeah.
So boring.
I know. I'm like, we don't want to be robots. Like,
I know.
Have a story to tell. Like, I personally put myself in situations now where I'm like, even if I don't like it, I'm still going to have a story to tell. Like, that's going to be fun. You know?
So. Oh, wow. That's a bit amazing. So finally, where can my listeners find you?
Yes. So just, I guess, in terms of social media, you can find me on Instagram or Facebook or honestly LinkedIn. I need to start tweeting, I guess. I'm like, I don't really know how to do that. but I'm Marina Paul. So just my name, it's Marina and then Paul. Yeah. Marina, like where you park your boat in the harbor.
I love that. And your book, where is that available?
Yeah, so it's exclusively available on Amazon.
Okay.
And walmart.com online. So
brilliant. Okay.
I know, but my we somehow got it into walmart.com. So I'm like,
well done. Oh my
it's gonna be available for hardcover soon. It's available for paperback and Kindle right now.
Oh, congratulations, honestly, on the success of your book and just the success of how far you've come in your life. You are such an inspiration to all the millennials and everyone else in the world.
You know what? I think we're all just doing our best. And I think I'm so grateful to have people that have supported me and been like, go do your thing. And if I wouldn't have had women like you and women who like, before me to believe in me, then I don't know that I would have had the courage to do it. So I just commend all the women who've come before me. So
that's beautiful. Yeah. And I like you mentioned your parents, I think, you know, they've had a big part to play in this for raising such a beautiful being like you. And I guess, you know, a lot of respect goes to them and, you know, the kind of values and beliefs that they've instilled into you. So definitely give them a hug from me.
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, parenting, I think, is like one of the most important roles, if not the most, that you have. If you are a parent and it's like you are literally changing, you have a direct hand in what you're changing. So I know it's one of the hardest jobs, but it is definitely, I think, one of the most important. And trust me, even if your kids don't like you right now, like they definitely will.
They will.
Yeah.
Remember, marry yourself.
Yeah, exactly. They're like, what?
Oh, lovely. So on that note, we are going to have to say bye. So thank you so much for bringing such an amazing vibe onto my show and for sharing your inspirational story and your journey.
Thank you so much. This was so fun.
Thank you. All right.
And while this episode comes to an end, you may want to check out my book, Victim to Victor, now available on audio and where I have shared my journey of evolving through self-help and a determination to cast off my damaging past. My goal is to reach out to fellow survivors of abuse and provide hope and motivation in their lives. I hope that I can help victors transform their lives and achieve amelioration in the process of discovering their true self. I also have a 12-week self-development plan, which is absolutely free, and it aims to guide you on your journey to recovery. You can find the link in the description below. Please like this podcast and tag or share it with somebody whom you know is going through a similar situation and may need help. I will be back with another podcast soon. Until then, take care and stay empowered.